All right, Lincoln Mitchell joins us. As I said, he is a writer and a scholar based in New York City. He's on the faculty, was on the faculty of Columbia for many, many years. Lincoln, welcome to the show. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for having me on.
No, I'm glad to. You know, when I saw the title, I said, you know, I'd like to keep my job. And I got concerned because it says, will Big League Baseball survive? And I said, I better pick this book up. But sort of the subtitle of Globalization, which we talk about a lot, The End of Television, Youth Sports, and the Future of Major League Baseball, all within this book. So tell us a little bit of how it came together, and I'm anxious to hear some of your analysis.
Well, it came together. I mean, I've been a baseball fan since the 1970s, and this book, when you read it, this is not a curmudgeonly middle-aged man saying, you know, baseball isn't as good as it used to be. I think baseball is great right now. But I'm also, in my non-baseball world and my work, I do a lot of work in the former Soviet Union. And when you go to the former Soviet Union, the fundamental reality is that if in 1988 you had said, 5 years from now this won't exist, people would have said you were crazy. And by 1993, people would have said, oh, of course not. That was inevitable. Of course it was going to collapse. And what you learn working over there is that institutions don't last forever. And that things that change institutions that, you know, are lurking all the time, and you have to look for them. And if you don't see them, they can surprise you. So I identified a few in that subtitle. You know, the end of television. Baseball relies upon television for an extraordinary amount of revenue, roughly $50 million per team per year, but nobody watches television. I'm exaggerating, but, you know, very few people watch television, right? The way kids play sports is different. And what that means is that a sport that, according to a lot of the data, relies on kind of being handed down through the generations, you know, when fewer kids play the game, they're going to grow up with a different kind of love for the game. They may love the game, but they may love it in a different way. And then, of course, globalization, I think, is self-evident. And, you know, the real gist of the book is not that baseball is going to collapse, but that Major League Baseball will change. And then, just as Major League Baseball always has changed, the game that we're playing in the 21st, I'm not talking about the on the field so much, but the structure of the game. In 1955, baseball was played almost entirely by people born in the United States of America, right? It was a game that was really suffering economically. You know, we always hear these stories of, oh, in the 1950s and 60s, people used to work, you know, in the winters, and it's always suggested that, you know, that was good. But it also impacted the quality of play, right? So the economics of the games have changed dramatically. Who plays the game has changed dramatically. And there's no reason to think that's going to just freeze right now and will be this way for the next, you know, 20, 30, 40 years.
All right. Well, you know, Rob Manfred is taken that position as well as trying to change the demographics of the game, speed up the game, and all the things that we talk about on the show. So that plays into this a little bit. Name of the book is Will Big League Baseball Survive? And as Lincoln just described, some of the areas that are changing, that are evolving. But I'll say this. The National League started in 1876, and, you know, you had organized baseball and different leagues. The Federal League tried to get in, the Players League, and baseball's always mirrored society, and it's always mirrored American history through the wars and expansion and changes in materials and all that. And somehow the game has evolved that way. And if you said to me in 1915, you said, boy, what's the game going to look like in 1922? I'd say, well, it would take six hits to score two runs. And, you know, you'd have two baseballs in the game the whole time. But by 1920, everybody wanted to see one swing of the bat and see the ball go over the fence. So they changed the ball to accommodate that. And isn't that what baseball's all about? No one's going to kill the game, but it may look different.
I think baseball is best when it gets ahead of those changes. And I would point to two. I point to these two in the book, which I think baseball really did well. One was integration, the civil rights movement, right? Jackie Robinson is a hero. You know, everybody who follows baseball knows who Jackie Robinson is. Jackie Robinson was, but everybody who's an American knows who Jackie Robinson was. And the reason is because Jackie Robinson was playing, you know, the Brooklyn Dodgers brought Jackie Robinson in before Brown versus Board of Education, before the Montgomery bus boycott. Baseball is actually a little bit ahead of the civil rights curve. It doesn't excuse, you know, the half century or more of apartheid between Fleetwood Walker and Jackie Robinson, right? But it was ahead of that. Another example is, as the population of the United States moved out of the Northeast and the Midwest in the post-war years, you know, the baseball got ahead of that. Now, where you're sitting, or with the Giants right now, it seems obvious that moving the Giants and the Dodgers was an important move for making baseball truly, Major League Baseball truly a national pastime. Where I'm sitting, you know, people would see that a little bit differently, right? But clearly they got ahead of that. I think they've done a good job of trying to get ahead of globalization. right? I think the World Baseball Classic, which, you know, I mean, I don't know what people, you know, you can make your own opinion of it, but it's really, in my view, a step in the right direction. It's really making an effort to continue the globalization. And that's where I think MLB, you know, should be applauded. But there are other areas where they haven't. I don't think they've, I think they've done a good job of adapting to the internet, but not necessarily replacing the television revenue. I think they've done a very poor job of reaching out to young people. I mean, I find, I find that this emphasis on shortening the game, you know, that's spending a lot of effort to solve the wrong problem, right? But it is, that's an example. I think the example of the mishandling of the PED issue for years and years. Baseball was behind the curve on changing views about medicine, changing views about a lot of things. So getting that right, staying ahead of the curve is very important.
Well, baseball has been a conservative sport. There's no question about it. But as the population changed, and as the after the war, travel changed as well, and the country became smaller, they realized that these markets were viable for Major League Baseball, and that's how the Dodgers, Giants ended up in California. But in the late 40s, they were talking about the St. Louis Cardinals moving to Los Angeles, or the St. Louis Browns moving to Detroit, to take advantage of changing populations. I think the TV question and the revenue is significant. I think that's important. I think as far as the beauty of the game, the story of the game, the heroes that young people look for at ages 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, I think that's always going to be there. And I think it's easier to find them now because of social media and things like that. But I think what you've said is significant, and that is television revenue. Because if you take that away, all of a sudden the business looks different.
Right. Now, but the hero thing is also different, right? I mean, there are, you know, if you think of how heroes are covered, right? I mean, Babe Ruth is kind of the baseball hero, right? If Babe Ruth hadn't existed, you know, some sports writer would have invented him and put him in a movie. Then we get, you know, all the way through about the retirement of Willie Mays and Mickey Mantle in, you know, 73 and 68, respectively. But after that, it's a little different with the hero, right? It's a little different when the hero, yes, is more accessible on social media, but can you know, send out that racist tweet, right? Or can be photographed in a way that's not great, right? So the accessibility of the hero really changes that dynamic as well. You know, there, and this really goes back to the 1970s, and really in the book I identify Jim Bouton's Ball 4, which was, you know, came out in 1970, as the moment when this changes, when sports writers begin to cover the players differently, and that changes the hero dynamic. People, I think of baseball players differently now, and they think of sports stars in general. They admire them on the field, but they're not the kind of hero that, you know, Stan the Man Musial was, you know, or Joe DiMaggio, who were seen as these kind of larger-than-life gods. I mean, there's no... You know, Derek Jeter was the closest, but Derek Jeter also generated a lot of negative press precisely because he was so polite and so good with the press and, you know, called Joe Torre Mr. Torre. There's no replacement right now. Mike Trout could walk into a supermarket in many cities in America, probably not in Southern California, and not be recognized.
Well, it's unfortunate for him because he's a good player, but
he's
I'll tell you, you look at the Cubs, or you look at Brandon Crawford and Buster Posey and Madison Bumgarner out here, you look at Syndergaard, I mean, I think they still market the players really well, and I think kids still get involved with it. But all right, we could debate this for a while. I'm enjoying this. But the book is Will Big League Baseball Survive? And do you have a conclusion, or do you want to give it away, or what's your thought on it?
The short answer is yes. The slightly longer answer is that it will survive, but will not necessarily survive in this form. Now, if baseball, so I give a number of examples. One is it just kind of becomes smaller, right? So television revenue isn't fully replaced. The revenue is about 80% of what they are today, which wouldn't really affect the play on the field because no one's going to say, you know, I was going to be a baseball player, but I found out that the top pitchers make $20 million instead of $25 million, so I'm going to go to, you know, law school instead, right? It wouldn't affect that. Another model is that baseball really becomes significantly smaller and begins to try to find ways to get revenue from this pool of intense fans that from a market angle they haven't extracted enough money from, right? So it's people like me who are really into the game and who will buy advanced media products, so they kind of up that game. The third and fourth have to do with the more looking at the globalization. So one thing, you know, that I think we see is that There are no markets in the United States for a baseball team. No place you can move a baseball team that is really a good market. If you go to Charlotte, North Carolina, you know, you get a couple years of excitement, and if they're good, you might draw big crowds, but that's not going to be an enduring baseball market. Neither is Las Vegas. So I look into the question of what would international baseball really look like? Would it be possible to put a couple of teams in Asia, in the Caribbean? And my answer to that is yes. There are some, you know, challenges, both logistical regarding travel and also other challenges. You know, it's hard to imagine a kid drafted out of a high school in Ohio going to play in Seoul. On the other hand, if you gave that kid, you know, the bonuses that a first, second round draft pick gets, they would take it. So those are some. I look at scenarios. I don't make a definitive yes or no, and I don't really make recommendations, which really is that's because of my academic background, where I think when you start making recommendations, it's just the easy way out. So I lay out, you know, these are four things to look at, four directions in which it might go.
Very good. Very good. Great. I think the book's terrific, and I think our discussion is really good. I think those are really relevant. You should be are you a lawyer? You're not a lawyer, right?
No, I'm a PhD in political science. I'm not.
All right, good. You're starting to sound like a lawyer. I feel like I'm back in court here. All right. Good argument and good issue spotting, and that's really what you're doing, good issue spotting. Will Big League Baseball survive? You can get it through Temple Press. I assume all over Amazon and all those spots,
right? Amazon, Powell's. I know I had a friend who got a Green Apple once. I don't know that it's still there in San Francisco, but definitely online pretty much anywhere.
Oh, very good. All right. I appreciate having you on. I will say this. I was in Havana for 2 weeks during January and early February and watched some baseball down there, and I know the island is changing. Things are happening down there, and it is, as you said, the Soviet Union, when they pulled out in 92, the Cuba fell apart as well because they relied so much on the Soviet Union. But maybe baseball in Havana in 10 years.
I mean,
how about that?
And there is a section on the book about baseball in the former Soviet Union, so that might be interesting as well.
Well, all right. All right. Pleasure having you on, and we'll talk some more. Lincoln
Great.
Mitchell, the book is Will Big League Baseball Survive? More coming up, KMBR 680, the sports leader.